Blog Talk Radio.
Here comes the time for all the wonderful people in this wonderful to unite. And one of the ways we unite is now by being connected to Soul Class, the higher inner frequency. Class 379, Secular by Design, Part 13. We're alive because we want to stay alive in Torah Chaim. Instructions of life, Torah Chesed. Instructions of kindness, Torah Rachamim. Instructions of mercies. You're listening to Here Comes the Time, extended version of Isaac Baton, which we've been waiting for 3 weeks to play. We just ended so succinctly in a little bit. Ruby Sire of Isaac Baton, blessed prayer partner and brother, praying at the famous Frankel Schultz, 1699, President Street, Kester Crown Heights, and also the president of Beit Mazal. We can hear authentic Jewish, African, Moroccan prayers. Blessed souls, we're now broadcasting live. Today is August 12th, and we're broadcasting in a semi-impromptu style, starting right now live with love from Turtle Island, a.k.a. the USA, unifying souls. Actually, programmed content today in this most existential of moments will focus on reading a small selection from Alan W. Cecil's seminal work. Seminal work? Not Seminole. That's a North American Indian.
Seminole. Actually, it's more Cherokee.
That's right. Okay. We tell it all with the seminal work, Secular by Design. That's Alan in the background giving our prelude to our little Monty Python tribute to Professor Dawkins. And Alan W. Cecil's seminal work, Secular by Design, A Philosophy of No High Laws and Observances. We do, in fact, highly recommend you purchase Cecil's book by accessing the following link, www.goodreads.com/book/show/1812. 6658-secular-by-design. You can go on Amazon.com as well. And to help you prepare for the program, the following questions are in order to arouse your divine image to consider the possibilities of expanding your blessed human consciousness. Number one, what are memes? Number two, can memes be harmful? Question number three, how do memes react in terms of using Jewish primary texts such as Torah/Bible/Old, and I add most emphatically and parenthetically an Eternal Testament and Israelite oral Torah traditions? Question number four, what do secularists ascribe as not pertaining to the Creator? Five, what is the intellectual error how secularists and scientists relate to the Creator? Question number six, how do scientists and secularists regard their axiomatic teachings? Question seven, blessed souls, what do Torah teachings aim to help we as human beings tune into? Meanwhile, may the Almighty Creator bless you and your loved ones peacefully and pleasantly. And with that being said, blessed souls, we're about to go into a reviewing of a concept called memes. Last week, Alan, being a good husband, went out for breakfast with his wife, which I can certainly recommend for all of you husbands to do if you want to keep your wife on your good side. On page 35, part one overview, Alan quoted from Dawkins, and in his 1976 The Selfless Gene, proposed that a meme is, quote-unquote, defined as an entity that is capable of being transmitted from one brain to another. So, Professor Dr. Dawkins, I'd like to play you a song, which hopefully will penetrate into your memes and spread to all the memes around the world of the human family experience. It's called the Monty Python Galaxy Song, and then we'll get maybe a little more serious, or at least we'll be serious when we get more sarcastic. Here we go, bless those around the next 2 minutes and 45 seconds, the Galaxy Song, the world according to the most serious of philosophers, the Monty Python troupe.
Whenever life gets you down, Mrs. Brown, and things seem hard or tough, and people are stupid, obnoxious or daft, and you feel that you hang quite enough, just remember that you're standing on a planet that's evolving. Revolving at 900 miles an hour. It's orbiting at 90 miles a second, so it's reckoned. A sun that is the source of all our power. The sun and you and me and all the stars that we can see are moving at a million miles a day. In an outer spiral arm at 40,000 miles an hour of the galaxy we call the Milky Way. Billion stars, it's 100,000 light years side to side. It bulges in the middle, 16,000 light years thick, but out by us it's just 3,000 light years wide. We're 30,000 light years from galactic central point. We go round every 200 million years. And our galaxy is only one of millions of billions in this amazing and expanding universe. And that's the fastest speed there is. So remember when you're feeling very small and insecure, how amazingly unlikely is your birth. And pray that there's intelligent life somewhere up in space, cause there's bugger all down here on Earth.
Yes, Alan, you know, I think if Monty Python debated Professor Hawkins or Dr. Dawkins, he would have his hands full.
I agree with that.
Okay, with that being said, by the way, we have about 21 minutes to go in the program. And if any of you want to call in, make an impromptu statement, 347-838-8669. Now we have to get serious. So let's get our serious thought processes activated, blessed souls, and go down to the bottom of page 36 of part one overview from Alan Cecil's, W. Cecil's book, Secular by Design, Philosophy of Noahide Laws and Observances, because this is a serious work. And with all right sincerity, I wish upon every one of you who are going to hear, who are hearing us live or will hear the archive version, to pick up the book. So here we go. Of course, many memes are harmful, such as anti-Semitism. So if we reduce it to this idea of that which is an entity which can be transmitted from one brain to another, I guess we can put memes as a way of expression, classical, ancient, and modern anti-Semitism, which Dan Dennett, who I do not know of, unfortunately, and probably fortunate of him, he doesn't know me, which Dan Dennett identified as a meme. So Dan Dennett had a way of classifying it, and this part of the book, Alan quotes from David Holcroft's and Harry Lewis's Memes, Mimes, and I'd say Memes, Minds, and Evolution from, I guess it's a collective work, Philosophy, Volume 75, Number 292, April 2000, page 182. The claims about memes are meant, at least by Dennett, to be taken realistically. Okay, so let's take them realistically. Memes that are truth-bearers have contents that need to be construed platonistically or as Phrygian, I hope I'm pronouncing that word right, senses. At some time, so the story goes, in a somewhat mysterious way, they acquired vehicles, occupied brains, and created human minds. But if that is available to us as an intentional stance, then this is a myth, albeit a noble one. Well, a noble myth, that's interesting. For there is nothing to contend over, and above the attributions made by our theory of interpretation. This indeed seems to be Dennett's own view. Quote, there are no real natural universal units of semantic information. Thus, this is a serious question whether there is available to Dennett's theory a meaning that would afford the memes the kind of robust status that memetics then demands of them. And that was, I guess, quote, based on the statement of Dennett, David Holdcroft and Harry Lewis commented in their book, or their writing, or article, or research, Memes, Minds, and Evolution. Any comment on this, Alan? And it seems, when these individuals of this like-minded set, and, we have to respect them because they are in search of something. They're not trying to stupefy people intentionally. But it seems like, it's almost like they're trotting in circles and saying, or walking in a circle and saying, we're moving forward, but they're really just staying within the circle of their own consciousness. Would you like to make any comment on what I'm talking about right now?
Well, there's really no solid definition of what a meme is. I've even read there's some of the secular atheists say that there is no such thing as free will. We are nothing but a collection of memes, and all of our behavior is controlled by whatever meme we have kicks in. So basically, when it goes up against the Torah, the whole theory of me, it's a good concept, of learned behaviors. I understand that. But
right.
But to the extent that they take it as to oppose the Torah, well, the theory starts looking more and more like something you would find in a cow pasture that you would sprinkle on your roses.
I see you have some Monty Python memes genes in you, after all.
It's Monty Python Day. What a strange person.
It's going on further. In Alan's book, the anti-Semitic meme, so if we're going to assume that it's assumed this dimension, anti-Semitism, as a type of entity, it makes it so ethereal, so mysterious. The anti-Semitic meme has infected academic and intellectual thought, corrupting, quote-unquote, the scientific objectivity of academic disciplines. The meme of anti-Semitism has followed a distinct pattern, which I've seen in my lifetime, before even coming in contact to such reasonings as then found in this wonderful book by Alan. The meme of anti-Semitism has followed, a distinct pattern, such as the avoidance of Jewish primary texts. We're talking about the written tradition and oral traditions of Israel. The use of theological arguments and influences, and even by those supposed non-religious and irrational and illogical arguments based on emotion. And Alan went on to quote Rabbi Yosef Elias in his commentary on the 19 letters by Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch, which was published by Feldham Publishers in 1996, page 50. While science can at best describe the natural processes, it cannot account for the ultimate forces that are responsible for their working, just as it cannot account for a first cause. Now, The idea of irrational and illogical arguments based on emotion is something that I am well aware of. There is a teaching from the 6th Lubavitch Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Yitzhak Schneerson, Avraham Lubavitch, also known as the Friedrich Rebbe, the Rebbe Rayatz, who talked about when one's emotions get carried away after an initial stimulation from the intellectual endeavor to learn a concept, a person must be very careful when experiencing a new emotion concerning that intellectual concept, because in their emotional fervor, they can actually disattach from the original intent of their intellectual endeavor and, so to speak, have a free fall of just emotional reaction to the concept, to the exclusion of going deeper into the concept to see where they still are lacking quite a bit of the database, which will allow them to make a conscious, rational, human, cognitive extrapolation, as opposed to just running on the emotions of their disdain of text, which let's face it, many of these intellectuals and scientists and secularists did not take the time to learn the Torah, the Bible, in its original language. What do you want to say, Hebrew or Aramaic? It came down in Yiddish and other languages, Ladino. So, Alan, is it that these people have just gotten so excited by these concepts such as memes or the Big Bang Theory that they kind of shut off a certain part of their brain to the exclusion of getting more information, which could have given them a wider perspective, and ultimately the ultimate perspective that we promote? I think Alan would, and Alan could speak for himself, but I think he'll think like this, that I'm Don Goodman, your local cyberspace Torah activist, do not believe that in any way, shape, or form there's a contradiction from biblical teachings, rabbinical teachings, and pure science. One should work with the other. They should complement each other. And there's an empowerment from the Torah that human beings, as part of the seven Noahide commandments, should make this place a better world by infusing healthy technologies to make everyone have a better quality of life. Alan, your take on these matters.
Well, that is exactly so. And this is the subject that we're going to explore in the rest of the overview, that there is no contradiction between science and Torah. There is a massive contradiction between science and Christian theology, and that is what the secular atheists are so upset about. And for us to, you know, the meme of anti-Semitism is so powerful, it's even influenced these people who might think of themselves, oh, I am not anti-Semitic at all. But
true,
it has influenced them in their scholarship, because
true,
they avoid anything written by the rabbis.
True, I agree with you, and they're not doing it out of a mean spirit, or as you said, they're not doing it anti-Semitism. But I think there's just they're running their love
memes
for what
they
do.
They've got that meme has kicked in, and they're going to avoid the Torah at all costs.
True. To give an example, as we go further into the book, let us look at the debate over the creation of the universe. I wish there was another Monty Python song we could bring up to prepare us for the secular viewpoint that Alan is about to discuss. The secular viewpoint is that matter has always existed or was created in the event secularists call the Big Bang. And I guess that wasn't the drum solo by Keith Moon or Ringo Starr, but rather something by whatever they call the source of the Big Bang, which, of course, if there's such a thing as the Big Bang from the Torah perspective, the source of the Big Bang, the creator, would have created the Big Bang. But the way secularists and scientists look at this, blessed souls, is the concept of matter not being God's creation is a concept that has influenced the way our culture views the world. How is this, the concept of created or existing matter, the basis of pagan thinking? Now, Alan, I have to scratch my head, and I'm doing it right now, actually my forehead, and I'm saying the very first verse of the Torah testifies, in the beginning, God created heaven and earth. So how can there be such a cognitive dissonance, a disconnect, from the most basic of verses that even five-year-olds are aware of? If you ask a five-year-old, whether he's a Jew or a Gentile, and they've come across this teaching, and you ask them, who's creation, who made everything? They say, God. They didn't go to school yet. They might be just going to preschool. But yet these secularists want to disconnect matter from the creation that we learned from the very first verse in Genesis. In the beginning, the Creator created the heaven and the earth. How did they get to this point where they just are in outright denial of such a simple teaching?
Well, that's a good question, and that is one of the things we will explore later in the book. But it is something, again, it is a learned behavior. They, it has to do with a history of the evolving Enlightenment, secular thinking, and it was a response against the teachings of Christianity. If they had taken the time to study the Torah, there would not have been a problem, but they did not do that.
Mm-hmm. Continue on in the book. First of all, there is the intellectual error of dealing with God using physical concepts or thinking of God as part of the physical universe. The intellectuals maintain that, quote, our belief is not a belief, our principles are not a faith. We do not rely solely upon science and reason because these are unnecessary rather than sufficient factors, but we distrust anything that contradicts science or outrages reason. And that's quoting from Hitchens' book, which I'm not going to say, just part of the title is not great, because again, I learned from Rav that to state Hitchens' book for me as a Torah observant Jew would be tantamount to some level of blasphemy. So I'm not going to mention the name of the book, but it is from page 5.
You can leave out the first word of the title and just say Hitchens is not great.
Right, Hitchens is not great. That's right. Alan, you know, this statement, our belief is not a belief. I mean, the only way I can relate to it is that I don't have to believe in my respiratory process, but I'm sure glad I have one. I'm very glad I have a sense of, I have the sense of sight and the sense of touch and the sense of hearing and the sense of tasting. I don't have to believe in it. I'm experiencing it. So, but yet, these individuals are so taken up by science. I mean, in a way, they are creating their own decrees. It actually, subconsciously, in like, say, the way rabbinical decrees were created from a different perspective, with the idea of protecting the pristine, I should say, opportunities that are connected to fulfilling biblical commandments. So while they don't have that basis or that Homer, that material to be their Torah, instead they make enactments and statements which are, I have to say, lahavdil, you know, to make a separation, which are kind of like binnacle from their own type of reasoning. It's their own type of Talmudic reasoning, Alan. That's the way I look at it, although I consider to be their reasoning very faulty. Your take on these matters.
Well, it's, again, you know, they are totally unaware of the very sophisticated logic and reason that the rabbis use to interpret the Torah text, the pilpul, you know, the Rabbi Yishmael's 13 laws of interpretation, things like that. They, when they look at the Torah, they interpret it the same way Christians do. They just,
right.
There is no system. There is no logic behind it. They rely on emotion, and they disregard their own advice, as we will see time and time again.
True. Concluding now, Alan, bless yourselves out there, reading from your page 37 of the part one overview. From the Torah perspective, God, Creator, is a singularity that is not part of our physical universe. The concept that the one God is the creator of all matter, as well as time and space itself, is a concept that is taught in the Torah, as I like to say, the source of what was just described, the source of all matter, the source of time, the source of space. He doesn't get caught up in matter and time and space as we do as created entities. He is the source of matter, time, and space. And there is a part of every human being that interfaces, or interacts, or configures with this dimension. And the Torah was given to us, we as human beings, all blessed and anointed with a divine image. I'm adding that parenthetically. That's not what's written in the book here, but I'm just adding that. I like to remind people to have that divine image. To attune this ruach, this spirit, to the other dimensional. It is not the Greek spirit trapped in a physical body, but an essential part of our total being. And of us to have a total being, we have to understand we have an essential part, which is way beyond what our five physical senses can be picking up on, blessed souls. The idea that God is part of the physical universe, to errors such as Dawkins telling us that, quote-unquote, Karen Owens has captured this witty-ditty little paradox in an equally engaging verse. And it's so silly, this reasoning, this is what Dawkins quotes here. Can an omniscient, and again, I ask forgiveness from the Creator for reading this, but just for the sake of clarification, then I'll add a brief elucidation by Rambam, Maimonides. Can omniscient, God, who knows the future, find the omnipotence to change his future mind? End of quote. I mean, this is ascribing a human dimension to the source of all being. And Rambam writes succinctly in one of his teachings, I believe it's either in his Laws of the Foundation of the Torah, in his Mishnah Torah, or one of his other oral Torah elucidations, where he wrote, the Creator, because he knows himself, knows everything. So there's no, and since he is beyond future, the whole idea, should he consider what to think about in the future through the vehicle of his omnipotence to change his future mind, is so ridiculous, because he does not exist as we exist, as we consider life or eternality. He is the source of future. He is the source of existential present, and he is the source of the past, and all those things exist as they are outsourced from him as the source of everything for human beings to learn more about with our teeny tiny little minds, which at the same time too are blessed with a divine image. Any concluding thoughts you have before we wrap up the show today? And I want to thank you for joining myself, to elucidate and to promote the idea that human beings can go outside and think outside the Western civilized boxed bubble of gooey, stewy thinking.
Gooey secular goodness, yes. The secularists will point to, oh, look, you know, Hashem said he was going to do such and such, and the people repented, and he changed his mind and didn't do it. He didn't change his mind. We did.
That's right.
That's the whole key to it. We have to change our minds and do what is right. Going back to another little thing about how these people like to think of Hashem in physical terms, they always like to use the little thing, can Hashem create a rock so big he couldn't lift it if he can do anything?
Right.
Well, that
right.
is putting him in a physical context.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't apply at all. And this is the error that these people make.
True. And because they make that error, Alan, because they themselves are trapped within their limited consciousness, as we all have limited consciousness, but that's the mercy of the Creator, that he gave us a Torah to go outside of our limited thinking one new fact at a time, whether we be Jew or Gentile, whether we're trying to keep the 613 commandments, whether a blessed nation of the world are trying to keep the 7 Noahic commandments, which are basically 7 axiomatic commandments, which can, some say they actually lead to like 31 or 60 or 83. There's even a Rav who says they can keep up to 611. So there's really, we've got 90 seconds to go, Alan. So I'd like to again thank you again. I'd like to make one more concluding statement before we segue out of the show.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thank you, and hopefully we'll reunite next week. And by the way, this is at 9:30 tomorrow morning, Eastern Standard Time. We hope to have international human rights activist Rabbi Eliezer Goldstein live from Jerusalem, heart to heart, from Jerusalem to the world, talking about what's going on in Israel, even though it was a, so to speak, ceasefire, which, because it's not according to the Torah, unfortunately is generating a strange fire, which people are getting inebriated by. And maybe he'll talk about that, whatever he wants to talk about, how to empower special human beings, unique human beings who have Down syndrome and other forms of delay, cognitive or physical delay. But that's what we try to do, bless us, to try to do all of this in a way to improve human consciousness in a way of a havachad, one of gorlachad, one destiny for all of us, but darchei shalom, darchei nom, in a peaceful, pleasant way, lahamshich be'ez Hashem yisbrek, to continue with the help of the Most High. Here's David Dome with a little instrumental segue out, the flight of the white eagle. Take care, everyone.